But most case scenarios, we're testing client side. It is all like cookie based, code gets injected, then it will impact your page speed. And I guess then it's the trade-off, like, hey, are we willing to trade a second? I don't actually know how much it is, but I'm sure we can look that up. But are we willing to trade that second for making better decisions and not shipping things blindly?
Welcome to this Experimentation podcast. I'm Lucas Vos, I'm your guest host for today. And for those who don't know me, I'm a lead CRO specialist at RTL Netherlands, a broadcaster in the Netherlands. But enough about me. Let's talk about the most important person for today, our guest. Is Lucia van den Brink, experimentation strategist at Spiro and doing lots of things on the side, talking at several speaking gigs. And I think she can talk you more about that in a few seconds. And we're going to talk about, setting up experimentation programs, stakeholder pressures, and many, many things more. So let's get started. Lucia, welcome. Good to have you here. It's also a bit weird for us. Huh? We are both Dutch. We're speaking in English to one another, so we have to shift a little bit. Just to get started, you are working now as a consultant, and you have also worked in-house for DBG Media. What is the most different thing you have encountered in the past years where you might have get used to?
So I guess switching from being in-house to an agency is, of course, it is very different doing experimentation. And maybe it's good to give a little bit of my background. So I'm really a crazy nerd. Like, I started building websites, like really coding it, when I was 11 years old. Then I had my own web shop. I had several websites and I would just write the code myself. And at that time, there was no easy thing like Shopify or like WooCommerce. It was actually quite hard. So I'm glad things have changed by now. But that's where my love for websites and with the internet actually came from. And I guess I still have this love for the internet and for the digital world. And I guess it started when I was working for big companies like a telco company in the Netherlands. And later on, like the biggest news website in the Netherlands, which has like 8 million visitors, very different from each other already. They were both in-house positions, but let's say the first one was more e-commerce and the second one was how do you optimize a news website, right? So then it's all about increasing the pages read by users, because in this case, they make money from the ads on the pages. So it's very different. Also kind of the same. So there you already see, quite a difference between those two. And then when going to work for an agency, that again is very different. But what is really nice about it is that you have the opportunity to look into different organizations and how they do things. And it helps me a lot to zoom out and look to experimentation from like a higher level and see like, okay, there they did it like this, here they did it like that. And I think this is the way, for example, or, you know, next time I can recommend this or that. So I guess like having a lot of diverse experiences in organizations, but also, just being in-house or agency or in one country or in multiple countries, it's all beneficial to your experience. And I guess also the way you would be helping the website perform.
All right. You have a lot of different experience already. And also you said, there is a lot of difference already between an e-commerce kind of a company and a, let's say a journalist kind of company, a media company. And also now you work at Spiro, like servicing a lot of different kind of organizations in different countries. Are there any major different things between the different cultures that you have worked with in terms of experimentation and CRO?
Yeah, there are. So I guess, and that was also my next challenge. So I had experimented on the whole population of the Netherlands. I was quite sure about that at one point. And then I thought, okay, what can I do next? Which was like taking the step to do that for the whole world. And then, yes, you do find things that, for example, would always work on the Dutch market, that doesn't work in other countries. And also the way you have different rules about things. So I remember I was optimizing for an Australian e-commerce website, also quite big, had 1.5 million visitors. But then they had special rules about how they could show the discounts and what they couldn't do. And that was something I had no experience with. So I had to do a little bit of research and see like, okay, how do Australian websites do this? And so I guess that's something new to learn, like regulation stuff. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, you also have like, what our main job is like influencing how visitors behave on your website, right? And possibly shaping or changing that. So in that sense, it's also all about culture, and how people respond to the same websites is also different based on which country people are in and what's their background. So that's super interesting to learn.
Yeah, I can imagine. Do you have maybe a bit of a tacit example of it, so that people can relate to? Like, Western Europe and Netherlands is some of a major difference between, an Australian something?
Well, I have noticed that, look, we Dutch people are very direct, which is a unique thing. And also kind of like, we don't like hierarchy. So if you would be saying to me like, hey, I'm your boss, you have to do this, I'll be like, I don't know what's this, but I'm not sure I'm gonna comply to this. But in other countries, it's not necessarily like that. And an example of this, like on a website, is that things to show safety or to say like, hey, this thing, you often see a message like secure checkout, for example. I think those stuff, it doesn't always work in the Netherlands because people automatically think the opposite. Like, hey, if they write it here, like, I'm not trusting you. I only trust myself. So I don't always, I haven't seen much good results with that unless you do it more subtle in the Netherlands.
This is Romo Santiago from Experiment Nation. Every week we share interviews with and conference sessions by our favorite conversion rate optimizers from around the world. So if you like this video, smash that like button and consider subscribing. It helps us a bunch. Now back to the episode.
But then for other countries and for people, I guess also not all countries are as far with the internet and using web technologies as in Europe. So that's also different. So in other countries that can work, you know, just saying like, hey, this is safe, you're good, and people will just trust that. That is an example, but of course there are many subtleties in this, and of course it won't be 100% true. To give another example, I'm also optimizing for a web shop currently that has a website in the Netherlands and has a website in Germany. The sites are both the same, but the conversion rate is very different for the German site. So that's really been a process of, okay, how does the German audience perceive this? And why do they not convert? So that's really interesting to do the research about that and to kind of learn about, okay, they look different to a website and they trust things differently. So I won't go into more detail, but at least you have a few examples, I guess.
I can imagine, and I can relate to a bit of personal experiences as well. You can have it even within the Dutch language area, with you have Flanders and Belgium, which can the people over there can react differently to a website because they have a bit of a few different standards for e-commerce as well. So I can imagine that. Besides all those differences, you have seen quite a lot of companies from inside or at least from a close distance. Are there any main pain points you have seen, like, hey, there's more or less similarity that within CRO and getting experimentation programs started or running, that they experience the same kind of things.
Yeah, I think there are definitely like the same kind of problems, but I would say like the pain points are different everywhere. So I know that some experimenters look for, you know, the perfect setting and it needs to be like this and we need to have all this data. And it's, I know that some people are very idealist and then, you know, want to want it to be perfect, but in reality, everywhere where you will go, there will be something that is, you know, not so easy or difficult. And in the end, I think what I've learned working for a lot of different companies is also in a way being flexible with what is there. And of course, you have to make sure you can trust the data and all that stuff. But sometimes you don't have all the data, for example, but you can still learn from certain things or, you know, certain setups. So I've also learned to be, you know, not so strict with saying, no, it should be this, this, and this, but more like, okay, you have this, so we can work with that in this way.
Okay.
Sounds so a bit vague, maybe.
Yeah, but to maybe roughly translate it is like, hey, see really what is there, what is there to use, and use whatever is usable, right?
Yeah, and don't get stuck on what isn't there, but because of course you're gonna want to fix that, but on the meantime you also want to keep your process running of experimentation, whatever that is, and maybe that's only research, or maybe that's only, you know, one test a month. But I think keeping that process running is actually like kind of determines the health of your program and of your experimentation culture as well. Because if you are doing nothing, and if you have nothing, then, you know, there is no experimentation at all. So it's also important to keep things going, even though it's not perfect, and even though you want to go like in a very different way. I think the first step is to not freeze and work with what is there and what is available. But there is a lot of issues, for example, data collection, tooling, cookies, cookie messages stopping your test. I mean, there can be so many things that go wrong. Yeah, they're just endless.
Maybe there isn't something as a very perfect testing environment.
No, probably only in our heads, like, oh yeah, if it would be like this, it would be perfect.
Yeah,
yeah.
I can imagine that. Good to see, hey, your message is like, hey, keep on going. If you are ever in doubt of, hey, there are some quality issues, but you say, hey, keep going and keep improving from that point, right?
Yeah, because often there is also like you do kind of have to prove yourself within an organization, and it doesn't matter if you're in-house or if you're like coming in for an agency or as a consultant. There will be always, I think there are often doubts about experimentation, and it's good to have those doubts as well. Like, I think that's only healthy to doubt what you're doing, right? But yeah, sometimes you will need to prove to other people who are not only doing experimentation what it is and what the value is. And in order to do that, you need to have something to show, right? And that doesn't mean like go run A/B test with random data or like double data in your variant. Of course, you want to maintain a certain standard. Yeah, in there, sure. But I do always try to look for, okay, if this is not possible, is there something else I can do? Or is there another way? Or, yeah, another research. Sometimes it doesn't need to be A/B testing as well, right?
Yeah, of course. There are a lot of other methods to validate kind of assumptions, or do at least a bit of research and see what are people actually doing on your website. Speaking of such, because you said about, hey, you have to convince people that you're there and that your work is valuable, etc. At least is my translation of it. And maybe good for the listeners to understand this. We, while announcing this this recording, we asked a bit of questions about, hey, if you have any questions for Lucia to answer, please shout out and leave them in the comments in the LinkedIn post. Although we didn't get loads of them, we got some valuable ones. And one was from Tim Barels, and who ask how to convince stakeholders of the usefulness of experimentation. And I think that relates to the thing that you're talking about. But maybe, you can get more into detail about it. What are the main areas, the main points that you need to bring across?
Again, I think there is not one way of doing this. Probably there is like tons of ways of doing this. But of course, what helps is if you can tie it to monetary value, like, and that's the easiest in e-commerce, right? You know, like, hey, there's a conversion that means so much money for you and so much spent on experimentation. And you can in the end calculate ROI, that kind of stuff. You can also estimate the value of winning tests over months, or you know, the declining value if the value would be less, for example. So that's one way. You have the money card to play. But I think there are more cards to play here, because it's also about how you make decisions in a way. So what we're going away from is we're going away from that opinionated boss that tells you how to do stuff. And we want to go towards like, hey, we have this evidence, so we believe that this works. And here, look, we also tested it, so we have proven an indication that it actually works. So that is, I think, a second thing, like making better decisions and making, you know, doing better stuff without just shipping it. So that's also one card to play. And then there is also, I mean, there's lots of ways to go about this, but there is also a part of it which is kind of democratization, which means that, and maybe it ties together with that decision-making process, but in fact, everyone in a company has a different background, right? Different values. Maybe one is a UX researcher, maybe one is a developer. And I found in my programs, and especially the bigger ones, the more people you will involve into experimentation and ideas, the more diverse growth opportunities you will also find. So for example, at nu.nl, which is that big news website I worked for, there we also got test ideas from developers saying like, hey, I'm not sure about if I should load this A/B test, if I should load this page immediately, like all in once, or like slowly in steps while the user scrolls. So that was a test from his idea and totally valid. It was a big winner even when we learned what was actually better. But it's just an example to illustrate like, using all the people in your company can actually be beneficial to, you know, to your company as well. So those are at least three cards that I would play at. But I'm sure there are more, and I'm sure there are people better in like the political game of it.
It's all definitely the politics comes into play. You're saying money. The ROI about decision making, making better decisions, and democracy. And I wanted to dive into at least one of them, the money part, because I think lots of experimenters and CRO people are maybe struggling or having the challenge. So, hey, how do I calculate, estimate an ROI of my experimentation program? How do I get valid numbers, or at least something that I can work with and which is trustworthy for whoever it concerns. Can you maybe help us a little bit, like, hey, how to approach that, or have you done it in the past, which was maybe a success or something?
Yeah, this also depends on, you know, what background you're from. Like I said, e-commerce is just a little bit more straightforward in that sense, because you can just have, you can have your revenue, or maybe what's better is like the profit from that revenue, and just put that next to all the costs you're making for experimentation. But that's like the global argument for experimentation money-wise, right? But you can also do that smaller and per test. And I know that there are calculators that help you with that. You can put in like average order value, and then depending on your traffic and your uplift, it mm-hmm. would say like, hey, this test will give you and then it gives you an estimate of dollars, euros that can come out of that. But the general idea is that also the effect of tests will get less like after implementation. So usually how I do that is I take the uplift, and I think every month I add that uplift. So cumulative and then subtract like 25% of the uplift to, you know, see actually the effect decreasing there. But that might not, that's like the worst, one of the worst case scenarios, because it might even, you know, cause an uplift. And that's something that we often don't measure in experimentation. We can, if you do server-side testing and you do things for a longer period, I guess. But maybe that's another topic, because we were talking about, how do you convince that money argument, right? How do you win that over? And for example, if you're optimizing for a lead generation website, so for example, you have a website and you're selling software, and you have like, the main goal is people to fill in a form and click the get demo. And then later a sales team will call them, and they also have a kind of a conversion rate. Maybe they close like 20% of the deals. So then you also need to think like, hey, the value of the click of that button is not the actual value of our product. That means no in Dutch. the actual value of the click of that button is lower, because that team afterwards has only a 20% closing rate. So actually you have to multiply, you know, that closing rate with the average lifetime value that you get from that. And then you have the actual value. So it also depends on what you're working with. I mean, don't get me started on the news website with ads, and it will get more complicated. And I guess if people need help, just send me a message on LinkedIn to help out. Yeah.
Good one. So, first of all, rule of thumb thing is like the average value up and uplift you get, like you calculate it with average kind of traffic, and then you let it decline over time. That's one of the things that you were saying. And it can be more complicated when it's different than just straightforward e-commerce. But we can relate to that. You have to take multiple things into account, and as always, it depends. That's a typically CRO answer, right?
Yeah, it is. It's a great answer, I guess. Yeah.
So we get all kinds of questions, and the answer is always it depends, like it's 42 or something.
I like that actually. Like the world is not so black and white.
Sure is. And it makes it also more fun, and it's also an area where you can make a lot of differences in it. It depends, and then okay, and what's then, and then you can get into a real conversation, like we have also now. Just also wondering, because while preparing this, we had also a bit already talked about developers. You have most CRO people and experimenters work with developers, and it can be sometimes really fun. Mostly is, and sometimes you have also a bit of a challenge, because there are also people sometimes to convince, because they have to do actual work for you, or at least with you. So you had some experience. I learned about developers not so fond of experimentation because of page speed. So maybe you can elaborate a bit more on that, and also take us along how you maybe tackled that issue.
So the argument from development side here is valid, right? If you implement VWO or Google Optimize, it will slow down your site, and worst of all, it will inject code into their perfect code and like totally mess up the website that they have built. So there are multiple things going on here that developers don't like.
Don't touch
that. Yeah. So Yeah, where to start? I guess the argument for site speed is just I cannot do anything else than agree. Yes, it does impact site speed if you do it client side. Let's say that as well, because you can also do server side testing, which is different. But most case scenarios, we're testing client side. It is all like cookie based. Code gets injected. Then it will impact your page speed. And I guess then it's the trade-off like, hey, are we willing to trade a second? I don't actually know how much it is, but I'm sure we can look that up. But are we willing to trade that second for making better decisions and not shipping things blindly?
Sticking to the development part a bit, my personal experience is also that there can be also complaints about security, that your testing tool is not secure. So yeah, and security, for sure, is something that you want. Don't want to be insecure or have a website which is hacker vulnerable. Yeah, but just how would you approach that if you got that kind of comment? Or is it something you wouldn't relate to?
It's something I haven't heard before, but I can imagine this to be an issue. And I guess the solution is also giving the power to the development and the security team, in a sense that, you know, we don't have to use a testing tool. We can just build our own and we can do it server side and you can manage all of that. So I think that would be one of the solutions here. Because I'm not an expert in like security around testing tools, but that would definitely be something I would suggest, because that would be even better for your experimentation program, potentially. So that's one road to go. And I guess another road could be like investigating if that security is really a problem, yes or no. How did you go about it?
To summarize it, we had a discussion, I think, almost 2 years ago. And by the end of it, it was really the trade-off. Hey, are we going to build our own testing tool? Yeah, but that's a product that you also need to maintain. Yeah? And are you willing to support it, etc., and to invest time in it? Or should we continue maybe with this tool or another one? But are there any things we can do to really improve security? And when we got one of the most strong criticasters on board on this one, like he was willing to cooperate and to improve stuff. He was part of the project team, which eventually redesigned the whole setup. Like we really did another kind of setup because we were using SiteSpec. That's a little bit different than using client-side tools like VWO. And it was a little bit like server configuration and lots of technical stuff I don't understand anymore. At least the most critical developers were talking to the developers of the testing tool and some other ones, and they got into a group and there had a they agreed on a certain kind of solution that was implemented and still running today. So and the discussion what is more or less has became silent about that, although critique is everywhere, but that's our daily life, right?
That's also a good solution. Like, okay, maybe this is going above our heads. Like, we cannot understand the depth of all the security stuff. Let's, you know, the devs and security team just work together. I think that's a great solution.
I think in the end, it was a great solution. The road to there was a bit bumpy, but we survived and we are still running. So that's cool. Another thing, why the art of not forcing. I didn't understand it beforehand, so maybe you can introduce it a bit and why it is relevant for our field.
I guess this has to do with a little bit of letting go, like, and now it sounds really maybe spiritual in a way, but for example, I have a client now and they're quite small, but they want to go really fast. So they want to do they already want to do the user test of two A/B tests that we still need to run. So we could set that up, right? We could link one A/B test to another A/B test, have do user testing in there. But it's a lot of hassle. So it's kind of like swimming upstream. Mm-hmm. Instead, we could also choose like, hey, we can also wait a month and then we do the user test and then it's actually live and then we can, you know, proceed to learn again, which is swimming more like, you know, a little bit more with the flow. And I guess it's good sometimes to see the difference in, and this is also part of decision making, like, are we really willing to swim upstream here or do we let it go for a bit and swim with the flow later? And this is just one example because there are many more. Like, for example, sometimes there is a really big rebuild of websites, of web shops, for whatever reason that might be. And of course, it's great to help out there with experimentation and test a new platform if possible. But sometimes that also means like developers are building the code and they don't have time for experimentation. And if you would be pushing on experimentation on that, you know, and maybe it's just a quarter that they're doing that, but if you would be pushing on experimentation that quarter, you will be like really going against the flow, I guess. So it's also good for our work to see sometimes the bigger picture of like, okay, now, I have seen this in-house, so mm-hmm. I will be sitting there like, oh, okay, so that means I won't be able to run experiments anymore, which is really weird, right? Because you're an experimenter yeah. and you just want to run, you just want to go, you just want to keep that process healthy. But then it's also like, okay, yeah, I can go against it. I can try to push, or I could let it go and do user research or something else. Mm-hmm. So this is, yeah, I found a thing in Chinese called Wu Wei. I don't know how to pronounce it. Sorry if I'm pronouncing it wrong for other people listening from China. Maybe I'm even interpreting it wrong, but I hope I explained it a little bit like, yeah, sometimes experimentation is just like swimming up the stream or with the stream. And there, you know, there are moments in, if you need to run a test, decision making, or you know how to scale your program, and sometimes it's all about also paying attention to that flow and how that, you know, if that could be better maybe in a few months, if it would be easier, if it would make more sense, or that you're gonna spend all your energy swimming upstream. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does make any sense in a way that. Yeah. What you already said, like, hey, use the things that are already there. So that's also what's already there is also the direction the whole company and at least your department or business unit is running. So that makes sense. Like, hey, you have to use it and not try to really change the fundamentals of it. Although it can be pretty hard when someone's saying, yeah, for the coming months we're not going to run any experiments. Yeah, I think. Most of us could freak out at some point, like you're killing my job or something. And that's something you have to deal with. That something, things outside of your influence can happen. So that's I think a good thing that we have to learn. And I know I'm not that good in that kind of thing, so it's also maybe sometimes a lesson for me. But in a certain way, it can help you.
I think we as optimizers, we get very result driven, right? We want to have results. We want to have results for others. So it's like something that becomes almost natural. But it's also a question to ourselves, like, hey, if you are not delivering A/B test right now, does that mean you are a bad experimenter? Does that mean your culture of experimentation is not there? Or is it just temporary and should you just let it go for a bit? So that's also something that's, it sucks, but sometimes it's good to acknowledge.
Yeah, exactly. Although I'm realizing, you said also that you have to get velocity, that you have to get running. And if you're not running, that's not compatible with each other at some point. So, how do you relate those things to one another? Because, if you are really aren't running, then you have a little bit of a standstill.
Yeah, true. So, ideally, you always want to run something, right? But sometimes doing research is also running experimentation in a way. Not everything needs to be A/B testing, of course. Yeah, but I agree. Like, of course, we like to see a healthy program with experimentation and with learnings. But sometimes that's just not the case. And then, you know, what are you going to do? How are you going to be flexible with that? And how are you still going to do something useful with your time?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, at some point, yeah, you can have that. And we have that sometimes here as well. And we try just to move on to maybe another part where the opportunities are more there. And also to talk together. If people are busy with a rebuild or something, most of the time, yeah, you can help them as well. Like, hey, we're just in doubt about these kind of elements. And maybe we can A/B test that or help them with this kind of research to maybe pre-validate something. Maybe also using tools like Usability Hub or something. That's also something we try to do sometimes. So yeah. Hey, before starting the recording, we were already a bit talking, and we had also talked a bit about ideation, how to get the best ideas, and because I think, yeah. If you listeners will have these kinds of challenges, maybe like, hey, how to get maybe better ideas or more ideas or more ideas from maybe more stakeholders or something, like, hey, can you talk us a bit through, like, hey, what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, so I have this nice combination that I also write literary novels, which is a very creative thing to do. But that really helped me develop my thoughts about ideation and how creativity works. So something we usually know in the CRO experimentation space is about system one and system two in the brain. I think this is just a model from Daniel Kahneman. There are also people that explain it with the original brain and like kind of the new brain, whatever you call it, doesn't matter. But it's important to understand the interplay here between those, between the two, because creativity is coming more from that system one, that automatic brain that is very good at associating. It's very good at, you know, coming up with ideas, the creativity part. It can solve 2 + 2 for you in no time, very quick. So that is actually the part that comes up with ideas and can associate also very well. But it doesn't work well when pushed or under pressure, because that's when usually the system two kicks in. So that's your ratio. And your ratio can do, you know, a lot of cool stuff. I mean, you can calculate the ROI for your program. You might have to think. You can judge whether or not your stakeholder is going to find your test idea stupid or not. You can judge with it. So, and do more complex stuff. But that part of your brain is sometimes in the way of the creative brain. So what I often see happening is that I see people having an idea and then they tell the idea and they say like, okay, my idea is to, I don't know, put products on the homepage if there aren't any and their goal is like e-com focused. And then they say like, oh no, that's a stupid idea because sales doesn't like that and this doesn't like that. And yeah, I don't know how to do it development wise. But that means you're already killing the hypothesis of like having products there would work, or at least the prediction that you have for that. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, sometimes the ratio and having, you know, thinking rationally too fast can really block you in ideas, because it might still be a valid idea, right? You just, sometimes we really kill ideas too fast. So what I always recommend is also kind of to give your ratio its own space and time and come back later to do, you know, create a hypothesis, do prioritization, all that stuff that we have. But also leave a space there to be creative and associate maybe based on the data that you have, or maybe based on competitors, you know, whatever input that is for you to come up with a creative solution. And then there is also another myth that you need to come up with one big idea and that idea, you know, is gonna fix everything. And often what that does is it puts a lot of pressure on you. So you immediately start rationalizing like, oh, is this the big idea or it's not? And also if you have only one idea, then man, it really has to be one great idea. And that's just not something that we're often capable of at, I guess. There is also research done, so to ideation whether you should focus on quality or quantity. The answer is quantity. So if you have, let's say, a bucket of 100 ideas, then your one great idea is just going to be in there. Maybe there's a load of crap in there. It doesn't matter. You will later filter that out with your ratio, with all your tools and prioritization. But just to kind of give that space for your creative brain is very important. And it's something that sometimes it seems like we have lost this a little bit, to just, you know, we recognize it when standing in the shower or when having a walk. So that is when your creative, like that reptile brain is really working. But you don't need to stand in the shower. You can already facilitate that just by, you know, not judging and not coming up with rationalizations. So that's a little bit of ideation that I like to teach to people. Also, you know, there is lots of stuff to talk about, like also should you do brainstorming in a group, yes or no, and how you should facilitate that. But I guess for now, like, this is kind of the base of it. It's like that creativity and the ratio are like, I don't know if you can say that, like water and fire to each other, like they don't work together well. And the second thing is like having one big idea is just really hard. It's better if you come up with hundreds and then, you know, like your one big idea is going to be in there.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah. Personally, I tend to focus also on getting more and more of these, like the quantity above quality, because yeah, you can trust above that you have really good ones in there when you have lots of them. So yeah, I can imagine that. Hey, touching a bit about brainstorming and should you do it or not. What's your answer to that? Do you have any recommendation?
And yes, if you have, yes.
A bit of a depends, how would you do that? How would you organize brainstorm?
No, so based on that knowledge of like creativity and ratio don't go well together, that also means that in a group we're also constantly kind of judging or like thinking things about others. So that is something that is always at play in groups, and I think it's called you're conforming to the group in a way. So if you put a group of people together, what they will come up with is one good idea. That is a good idea according to the whole group. If you put them aside, so usually what I do is I give people like their own 10 minutes or 15 minutes to come up with ideas. And that can be in a brainstorming session. I mean, I could sit next to you and work on my own, right? But then at least people, you know, go into their own knowledge, their own background, and they say like, yeah, for me, this would be, these five things would be great ideas. And then, for example, if a developer is sitting next to me, then he would come up with five totally different ideas. But, you know, it doesn't mean they're not valid, or it doesn't mean they're not good, for example. So in that way, you can facilitate a little space and time for each to have, you know, to just think to themselves what would be great ideas. And then later you can come to the group and like maybe make little groups of like three people, and they all present their ideas and pick out together the three best ones. And that's when you're going to use ratio, right? That's when you're going to think like, oh, this is impossible to develop, or this will work, or this won't work. And then, you know, you are already filtering together and using that judgment. But I would say before that, give everyone space and time to think and try to keep that judging part of the brain on a distance.
Okay, yeah. So you are a bit of a fan of brainstorming, but keep the group pressure a bit out of it. So
So
for individuals as well. That will be your answer. And also, hey, the creativity part. Sometimes we do here brainstorming, and we do kind of warm up sessions, like to get rid of maybe frustrations from the past meeting or something out of the room. Would you recommend that, or wouldn't you recommend so?
Yeah, that can be a great idea. Like you're coming into the room with a, kind of a setting, right? And the things you have experienced. And yeah, I'm not sure how that works actually. So next time I see you, I want to do that. See how that works.
Okay, that's nice. Yeah, a bit of exploration, because maybe some listeners think, hey, warm up, what kind of things? Yeah, think of creativity games, like you have a kind of a puzzle or kind of let's think of 5 minutes, like how many names of fruits can you come up with, or how would you draw a bridge, how would you draw the person next to you or something, like really a different tune out of what you have done before. Really, yeah. Something different, and also maybe different from warmer, just to get a bit of a reset in your brain. That's the main goal.
Nice.
Personally, I'm pretty much fan of it, because, it especially when you do a brainstorm in the second half of the day, of the working day, that people, have something with them, which the experience of that day already. And it can be positive or negative, but it can bias the whole thing altogether.
Yeah, because someone's brain can be in the meeting before, right? They or their thoughts. I mean, yeah, I see.
Yeah.
Nice.
And maybe they had a negative message or a negative surprise, and their negative feelings can come into the room, because we're all humans. So we can't walk to the door. It's not really out of the window in 1 second.
I think you should share those exercises, Lucas. Like, just put it on LinkedIn or something.
Yeah, maybe good idea. Maybe good idea. So there are people you might see something in the coming weeks. Just one question. I think it's also good, because when you do a lot of A/B testing, when you do a lot of experiments, and you get a lot of learnings. We have already talked about a bit of the rationality, and also maybe the limited rationality that we have, that we have not an unlimited kind of memory. So how to keep track of all the learnings and build onto that. So that was a question from Berber Belsma. How would you do that? How to keep track of all the learnings that you have and build on top of it?
Yeah, I guess the standard nowadays is kind of using Airtable, but that sounds like a very easy answer. But I guess even if you use Airtable, that doesn't mean you automatically are very able to find your test, or you do have to put some work into categorizing tests, maybe based on strategies, teams, or maybe even a psychological tactics that you use. If you use Airtable and you put your test reports in there, it's good to be a little bit more detailed. It can be also just like, hey, this test was a mobile, or this test was a winner, yes or no. But these are all variables that you can link as information to your test, which can later help you to build like a dashboard of all the winners on mobile, for example, on the social proof strategy, or on fixing something that you might have found in research. You can also link it back to your research, of course, which is also great. But for some people, Airtable is too far away or seems too difficult, and you can always start with just a Google Sheets and just list your test and say if it's a win, yes or no. I mean, it can start as easy as that. If you're just starting with doing zero experimentation, that's also fine, but later on you're gonna want to have something that will help you find what you're looking for, or like dig into your own memory, but then the memory of all the tests you have done. How do you do that?
We use now Airtable, and we started with that 3 years ago, and it also was based on a Google Sheets, which was not that complete. And we step by step build it, and we got also to the point, and maybe that's also good maybe to share, that we felt that we sent people into the woods, like, and they're really in danger of being lost in there. So, hey, we maybe to give a bit of context, now we have done more than 300 A/B tests in the past, I think, 3.5-4 years. Up to five, but the majority is in the last 3 years. So yeah, that's a big list you have to wander through if you just have a list with no context. So now Airtable has a new functionality. It's called interfaces, and now we have built that on top of it, like a little bit of a browsing thing, like search and browse and filters, and also a page where they can follow the current experiments run, because we have now multiple teams running experiments, and then people want to have keep track of hey what's running right now. I'm just curious. The first learnings, because we're now doing that for 2-3 months, are pretty positive, but we'll have to learn also how to use yeah, for ourselves, but also for our stakeholders who want to keep track of all the things that are happening. Because you don't want to have the people are asking for the things that they're not able to find, because they have to just dig into all kinds of data, and that's the thing that you don't want to have. And also for yourself, that's also a bit of the challenge that we had. But before RTL, I worked at NSA, one of the major newspapers in the Netherlands, part of Mediahuis, a big newspaper company in Netherlands and Belgium. And what we also did, and that was also nice, we had a closed, just WordPress kind of environment, like everyone just creating, like it was a blog posting thing, and you can create like a blog post with a template, very simple. And post it over there, and it was easy, also pretty easy to do to use, and you can categorize it, and it was also nice back then. So
smart, and then you can just search in everything that's written in there. Great. I know that also like Airtable wise you can do so many things. Like at Spiro there are like automations in there that you can immediately create a new test from an idea somewhere, and it just automatically pops up a document, or what else do we do, like send messages to Slack, like hey, this test is ending. Or we also build the dashboard for clients so they can see like this is my to-do list, as for example the client has a to-do list, like they have the check stuff. So lots of cool stuff in there you can do potentially for sure.
For the listeners out there questioning, hey, do they have stocks in Airtable? At least the host doesn't have I don't know if you do it. So we're not sponsored by Airtable, at least yet.
I'm just sponsored by like enthusiasm most of the time.
exactly that. To conclude on the Airtable part, I think it's a really great and powerful tool if you set it up correctly. And for me, or for us, what works is also documenting screenshots. Like, okay, how did it look? Of hey, what do we do? Or wander through again and then see the A/B testing that you did 3 years ago, that can sometimes be also a bit of a spark to get new ideas already. So hey, back then we did that, and it was already maybe a winner. I didn't recall it anymore, but hey, it's maybe something that we can use, because you tend to do something else which might interfere with that learning back then. So
I mean images say more than 1,000 words, right? Is what people say. It's just like easy, you don't need to read, and it's perfect.
Exactly I think maybe to conclude on for now, but maybe you have something something untouched you might want to share with the listeners, maybe some final words,
No final words like that to inspire you. I guess this whole talk is already there. But what I would like to say is I'm very active on LinkedIn these days. I don't know what happened. I didn't used to be. But if you ever have any question or just, you know, want someone to talk to about Xero or experimentation, just send a message. It's also what I do to a lot of people that I look up to, or at least, you know, just I ask a lot of questions on LinkedIn, and I hope other people will also find me, because I will be happy to help out. And I know a lot of people in the Xero community are always willing to help out. So that's really great about our, yeah, the community that is there. So hit me up on LinkedIn, I guess. And any questions, I'm also open to that.
All right. Yeah, thanks. Great final comments, and I think a great invitation for all. To conclude, I want to thank all listeners who have listened to this podcast. I hope it was inspiring and helped you somehow. That was it. So hopefully some next time. Thank you.